Welcome to the Learn My Craft podcast. This week, I am so excited to be joined by Marco Bucci. Marco is a concept artist and an illustrator working in digital and traditional mediums. So he's known for his magical and expressive character design and world building. So his client list includes well-loved brands like Disney, Lego, Hasbro LucasArts, and many more. Marco generously shares his knowledge through YouTube, where nearly a million subscribers tune in to watch his easy-to-follow tutorials. I am delighted to welcome you to the podcast, Marco. Hello, how are you doing?
Hello, Samara. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm so pleased that you joined us today. I absolutely love your channel. It's so helpful, so inspiring, so useful to artists. So thank you so much for coming on here to chat with me today.
Of course. Well, thanks for the kind words. Yeah, YouTube has become a huge part of my life over the last 9-10 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm sure it helps a lot of artists. So I wanted to start by asking you first, what you've learned about the art, like what you've learned about art by working with big studio clients and how that shaped your creative process.
The main thing I learned is how important the fundamentals are, because every job will require of you a different style. Whether you're working digitally or traditionally, the styles will change, graphic style, painterly style, you know, whatever, anything in between. And having a good grasp of the fundamentals will guide you through that. And style can be, you can adapt it. Even if I've never worked in a particular style, I can learn that. Because it's all based, rooted in fundamentals. So that was the big thing that I learned, like learn the importance of that, and caused me to further study in that regard. The next thing I learned more like practically is just having a thick skin when it comes to revisions and when visions don't quite match. Like, it's not my job. It is my job to put a vision forth, but I have to ultimately match someone else's vision when you're working for a big studio. And there are so many areas of, say, red tape where you're like, you can't do this because, you can't do that because, we have to do this. And you might not think that's the best creative choice, but you have to do it if you're going to choose to work with them, that is. And also, when you're done and you submit your final that you spent days on, probably, you're almost never going to get away unscathed without revisions. And I've learned over the years, I learned pretty quickly to develop a pretty thick skin. If someone makes a comment on my work, I never take it personally. It's just they're trying to get a product that works for the client. So those are two big things.
Wow, that's so interesting. So can I also ask, like, what's been your favorite institution to work with?
Yeah, well, I'll give you two answers. I'll give you my favorite job and then my favorite place. It's hard to pick one place. My favorite category of place a client to work with is actually small publishers, because they are more likely to give me a bit more creative control, and I can usually run wild a bit more when it's a smaller company. However, opposite of that, my favorite job I ever had was in 2016 and 17. It was a pretty long illustration job for Disney Publishing. Where I got to illustrate the book version of their Nutcracker film that came out around the same time. And this is a once in a lifetime thing, I swear. They told me just to do it in my style. They hired me like for my natural art style, which is very painterly and brushy and stuff. And they're like, yep, just do it in your style. And yes, we had notes along the way for sure, but I got to paint how I would have painted anyway. And, you know, I got paid for it. And then the book came out and it's still... It sold well. And that was my all-time favorite job I ever did. And that was mostly because it was, I guess, a big company, and I got to do what I wanted to do.
Yeah, that's so fantastic. I absolutely love your style. I love how painterly it is. And it's so, like, expressive as well. But your lighting, I feel like, is so clever and glowy and beautiful. It's a wonderful style that you've got.
Oh, thanks.
So how has your own style developed over the years, and what are your main creative inspirations, influences?
My style developed largely when I started painting and drawing from life, which, if anyone, all of my students will know this about me. I, I, 100% recommend people paint and draw from life. That is, that doesn't mean from photographs. It means outside in real life or from the live model who might be posing on a podium or just people living their life outside. Photo studies are great too. They have their place. But when you study from life, there's nothing between you and the subject. And anything you put down on the page is filtered through your own eyes and your own brain and your own creativity and aesthetics. And nothing is pre-digested for you. So everything is purely from you. So I learned a ton of just exploring. Like I would, see a beautiful scene of something or other. And, usually it has to do with the light, like the way the light is hitting something. I don't care if it's the Eiffel Tower or a garbage can. If the light is nice, that's worth painting. And there's so many possibilities for nice light. It could be a nice overcast or it could be a beautiful sunset. There's so many different things. And when I painted that stuff, I realized a kind of a critical detail that it's not about the subject. It's not, if I'm painting, I've painted many garbage cans. It's not about the fact that it's a garbage can or a beautiful cathedral. It's the way the light is hitting it and the way color interacts with that. And then you, as the artist, me in this case, I layer on the expressive brushwork that I feel best captures it and feel like I can involve my own like muscles and movement in the process to create a piece that ultimately is coming from an individual. So it's only painting from life that taught me that. And like thousands and thousands of times, like not it wasn't any one painting that did it. It's just the repetition. And I learned that repetition is m way more important than quality. The quality will come, but the repetition is what matters. Think of it like lifting weights in a gym. You got to get in there all the time as many times as you can, just to keep doing it. Proper practice and just repetitive. And then I apologize. What was the second part of your question?
And what are your main creative influences?
Oh yes, thank you. Well, I guess that so. Well, real life is one, but I already talked about that. Obviously, no one learns in a vacuum. Other artists have been hugely influential on me, and I've actually just started to maybe started to make some videos on showing those artists to people because I get asked that a lot. Where I got inspired from. Oh boy, the list is huge, and I wouldn't want to bore you by going over it. I don't even know. It'd be hundreds of names, right? But my first ever teacher I had was a guy named Nick Calisley, and he taught me gesture drawing and how to see properly, like see the figure with gesture and build forms and stuff like that. And that changed my life really. And then I discovered painters of the past, like this is a cliche, but John Singer Sargent probably is my all-time favorite painter just because of how boldly he could put down strokes. And I've chased his paintings around the world. I've been to Scotland. I've been to Boston. I've been to different where in Scotland? I can't remember. Edinburgh. He's got a Lady Agnew is there, and I've seen his paintings around the world. I went to a watercolor exhibit in London of his, and just to see his paintings in person, just the way he uses his brush is inspiring to me. And then, of course, there are like just modern day production artists. Paul Felix, a longtime Disney artist, has been a huge inspiration for me. This artist who used to be an animator, worked at Valve, a guy named Mark Beam. Was an early influence. He helped me when I first started digital painting, helped me with some process and kind of showed me the ropes a little bit just through email. I never actually met him on just how he would achieve certain things. And there's so many names like that. Just people who I've crossed paths with either in person or via email, just as a fan, and being willing to help out. And I guess that's also why I feel compelled to give back to the community myself.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Yeah, it's always an endless list of artists that inspire you, isn't it? Like I can only think of like four right now, but there are just hundreds because you just see them everywhere as well. Like whether they're big artists or small artists, they do influence you in a way, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
So in terms of your style then, like is that something that you specifically worked on, or is it something that came naturally as you did the reps?
Yeah, it came naturally. I'm a firm believer that your style is just an expression of who you are as a person. Like your personality is your art style. I have always been, like if people are familiar with my paintings, I have always been like that, like very slapdash, leave the fingerprints on the work, so to speak. My parents got me playing music, like piano lessons when I was 3. I was very young. And that was, I guess, my first exposure to art is actually playing music. And even as a young kid, I remember trying to play the piano in my own way. Like I would learn the sheet music, but I would try and like jazzify it and make like riff on it and play my own things. And back then I would actually get in trouble for that because I was trying to, rise up the ranks like of the academia of music, right? And you can't do that when you're taking an exam. You got to play what's on the sheet music. So, but I always had it in me to try and do my own version of things. So painting is like that too, where I feel like it was always there in me to use these wild brush strokes and have all these different brushes that I use and, fun ways of painting things. And I just had to unlock that with the fundamentals, like going back to what I said earlier. You can't have a cohesive style if you don't, if it's not rooted in fundamentals. So, much like I would get in trouble playing piano and riffing on music, in painting is the same. I had to like discipline myself to say, okay, like let's learn what's underneath all this. It's like anatomy, for example, is just one of many things. Shading, lights and shadow. Let's learn that. What are the types of reflected light that are in shadow? Bounce light, ambient light. Let's learn all that. And then once you have that knowledge at your disposal, then you can just kind of like go for it, pull different tools out of different tool bags and hit the canvas with them. So that all
Yeah.
happened organically. Learning the fundamentals did not happen organically. That was something I had to force myself to do, and I enjoy it. So it was fun, but the style happened naturally.
No, that's so fantastic. I think a lot of people try and skip the basics, don't they? And try and go straight to this is my style, this is a finished piece of work. And I guess you lose something from not learning the basics as well. And I guess people that are also, a little bit naturally talented, I'd say, also forget to actually concentrate and learn the basics. I definitely feel like I had that issue. Because I was good at copying pictures, I never actually sat down to learn the basics of values and lighting and composition and that stuff because I didn't necessarily need it to start with. So,
That's right.
yeah, those things are so important, aren't they?
Yeah, I would actually say that you kind of hinted at it there. People who are naturally talented or gifted, which I was not, I would actually think those people are at a disadvantage because, like you said, there's no incentive to sit down and learn the basics because you feel like from a young age you already have something. You have a bit of a head start, right? And there will come a time, which I'm sure, like I think you alluded to it, where you have to be like, okay, if maybe there is a limitation here that I can break through only when I go back and do the fundamental stuff like everyone else. I guess I was lucky in that I was not naturally gifted. So that was the only way for me was to learn the basics. And I didn't know that you could learn to draw. I thought it was something you did have to be born with for the longest time. I started drawing when I was 19 years old for that reason. I was not naturally gifted. I had other art forms. I could play music and I learned some computer graphics and I enjoyed those things. But it was only reading someone's blog. It was a Pixar animator's blog back in 2000, maybe. I think it was 2000, 2001, where he said, "You can learn to draw, go to life drawing classes." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." So I did. And that, there you go.
Oh, that's so fantastic. Yeah, it's definitely like I feel like everything is a skill that you can learn, and people just don't necessarily realize that.
I agree.
So, going back to learning, I've seen you talk a lot about the value of gestural drawing and life drawing, like you've just said. So, can you tell us a bit about why it's so important?
Yeah, gesture drawing is really only concerned with one thing, and it's capturing the like the mood or emotion of a pose, which includes like the body language that the person is exuding, how they're holding their weight, any motion that might be in play, or how they're holding their hands on their hips or whatever. Anything that is giving you the feeling of the pose, you can capture that in a quick gesture. When I say quick, I mean 30 seconds. A good gesture drawer can do that in 30 seconds. Typically, you'd see a minute to 2 minutes, people capturing a gesture in that time. And it's all, there's no form or no anatomy, no lighting. It's just what looks like scribbly lines, but they are like intentional. They're basically C curves, S curves, or straights, these big sweeping rhythms, I call them, through a pose that have the power of capturing the body language that is going on. And if anyone's listening to this and has never seen a gesture drawing, just Google it. I have some videos on my YouTube channel about that as well, and you'll see what I mean. But it's all very free, and it's one of those things where people who don't practice drawing probably wouldn't really understand a gesture drawing because they would think it just looks like a scribble, but it is so useful because you, just like a foundation of a house, you build everything else on your gesture. And the gesture captures the most important thing, in my opinion, which is the mood. And then you build the more technical stuff on it, like form, anatomy, lighting. That's why gesture is so important. And it's fun too, because you can do it quickly. I used to, when I lived in Toronto, and now I live out in the country, so there's no people around me, which I like. But back when I lived in Toronto, just flooded with subways and all that stuff, I would go out 4 or 5 times a week, just with a sketchbook and a pen, and just sit there and draw people at the mall or on the subway. And got kicked out of a few bookstores once. And for that man is drawing me, but I learned so much from that.
That's so fantastic. So do you use sketches even now as part of like your practice and your process?
Oh yeah. Even today, I gesture first. Yep. No matter what I'm drawing. Even a background, I'll kind of gesture it in, like just kind of plot things. With gesturing is largely about plotting where things are and connecting them with rhythm, big rhythmic lines. So if I'm designing a character or doing an illustration, I absolutely will gesture first. Yep.
Okay, very cool. I've actually never tried gesturing, but you have inspired me to try it. So I'm just normally like copy the picture kind of person, but I haven't done enough life drawing to really, I guess, need gesturing in that sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt. I definitely don't think what I'm saying is a prescription for everyone. It's just like, but I do think if anyone wants to be like an illustrator who can pull a picture out of their imagination, gesturing, in my opinion, is a requirement because that's your early like magic eight ball into the future, into feeling the characters come to life really quickly.
Yeah, definitely. No, that makes sense. So when you're putting together like a composition, how are you using shapes to draw the eye to the right places and create that pleasing composition?
Good question. Shapes in painting, shapes need to be paired with a value. A value meaning a shade from white to black, anything in between. So a shape comes with a value, and values can create contrast, light versus dark. I would suggest to anyone that the most powerful tool you have as an artist is high contrast. The eye will always be drawn to high contrast. Our eyes are just designed that way, or our brains anyway, are designed to look at the high contrast stuff. Also things in motion, but we're not talking about motion, we're talking about like a still picture. So high contrast is your best tool. So usually I design a composition around the highest contrast point, and I decide right away where that is. And it's not a hard decision. It's going to be somewhere around the focal point being the thing your picture is about. If I'm painting I painted a big green monster and his friend reading a book, floating through a river reading a book. Well, I'm going to put the highest contrast where the characters are because I want the viewer to see them first. And then all the other shapes, in this illustration I'm talking about, there's a boat, there's a foresty background, the river spans the rest of the page. All those areas need some contrast so the viewer can see what it is and enjoy those details. But you are gradually reducing value contrast in a creative way. Like it's not like you can just like make a vignette filter or something. You have to do it in a creative way. But that's what composition is. It's sort of a two-part challenge. High contrast where the focal point is, as far as your shapes are concerned, and then lower contrast elsewhere. And you can pepper in some high contrast here and there for little accents. But in general, it's a challenge of controlling your contrast distribution.
Fantastic. No, I feel like that's clicking in my mind. It's like, oh, so when I've done that thing, that's why it's worked because of the contrast. And it's like sort of unpicking what's working and what doesn't work and why. And I think that's very useful to know. Thank you.
Oh yeah, like I'm looking at the pictures in your background, Sema, and like they're so like on my screen, they're so small, right? But like my eye sees all the contrasty areas. I see the cat on the top left there by way of the white versus the dark. Like it's just that simple. And you can use it. It's such a powerful, simple tool, but like any tool, or like any simple tool, it's easy to overdo it. It's like putting highlights everywhere. It's easy to put highlights everywhere and overdo it, right? But it's if you have a focus system, you can use it to your great advantage.
Yeah, definitely. Because you do really beautiful, like glowy lighting in your illustrations. I love your little monster illustration series. They're just so nice. So when you're thinking about lighting and you're planning it, what difference does it make to the final piece? Like, how much of that do you plan?
When it comes to lighting, I plan a lot in advance. Like when I say plan, I mostly have a like a just a vision for it in my mind. And what that entails, like physically, is what is the light source? Is it the sun? Is it a window? Is it a overcast day? Or is it at night and the moon is lighting them? Like what is the physical light source that we're dealing with? Is it a light bulb? So I know that right away. And then I will say, next question. Where is it? So, is it, if it's the sun, is it the sun coming down this way, down that way? Is it a backlight? If it's a light bulb, where is the light bulb? Or if there's two light bulbs, I know where they are. And then from there, it's just an exercise in terms of picking colors and values. Like my brain kind of switches into rendering mode, which is another fundamental thing you study. Like how do the values, the lights and darks, the shades, how do they respond to these light sources? Now, that's something that takes study, which we talked about in your first question about studying a lot from life under all kinds of lighting conditions, right? So like now, I've been doing this for 24 years now. I know what a light bulb does with lighting. I know what the sun looks like. I know what overcast sky looks like. I have all, I've built this visual memory up with probably thousands of stuff. Maybe hundreds of thousands, I don't know, thousands and thousands of studies of different lighting scenarios where I don't really need reference to start. Like sometimes I'll need reference for to draw certain things, like a chandelier, I would need reference for that. But like if I'm just lighting something, like a character, I usually will know what that looks like because it's been downloaded in my brain so many times from life. So yeah, the lighting is always planned. To get back to your question, the lighting is always thought about first. Now, it doesn't mean I don't change my mind, though. Sometimes I'll be doing a painting and I'll be like, this light is not doing what I think, what I thought it was going to do. So you change gears, you paint it all, scribble it out. I work on just one layer, so it's easy for me to just scribble things out, digitally, that is, and then just change the light source, try something else. If it's for a client, sometimes you'll have thumbnails. Oftentimes you'll have thumbnails where you just simply work out compositions, like maybe three different passes. And in those passes, maybe I do change lighting just to present different options. But if it's for my own illustration, I usually don't thumbnail. I kind of jump into a canvas and just start sketching around and see what the light does. But I do get the light in. The light is really part of that composition because it influences the contrast, like I just talked about. So the lighting comes in very quickly.
So have you ever come across when you've given, I guess, a few options to a client, have they ever chosen the one that I guess they haven't necessarily asked for, but they like a lot more because you've played around with it?
Yeah, that happens. That happens a lot. Yeah, there's a whole wide range there. Some clients are very specific. Some clients will even sketch the thumbnail for me in terms of like, we want this camera angle, like this view, and then I just kind of flesh it out and like draw it better, basically. But other times, you'll just get a paragraph of text saying like, the character is on top of a hill. There's a castle in the background. He's picking a flower. Okay, well, there you can draw that a million ways, right? So my magic number is three. I'll do three thumbnails, and my thumbnails, they're not like scribbly ones. They're kind of worked out just so the client can understand the picture as best they can. And yeah, they will often pick something that they hadn't thought of, and I actually like those jobs the best, where I just get a block of text and I can interpret it how I want.
Yeah, definitely, because that appeals to your creative freedom then, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So why is reflected light important then, and how can you practice using it?
Oh, that's a good one. Reflected light is, I would argue, probably the most important type of light to understand. I mean, actually, I shouldn't say that because they're all fundamental. The fundamentals are not ranked in importance. They're all important. But reflected light is beautiful because, first of all, it exists everywhere. In my camera right now, most of what you see is reflected light. You see a little bit of direct light from that window back there, but the only reason you're able to see me is because light is bouncing off the doors, off the ceiling, and hitting me. That's all reflected light. So reflected light is light that is indirect, that is, it's not directly from the sun or directly from a light bulb, it's indirect, bounces around and illuminates the shadows. And we see so much of our world is in shadow. You know, there's if you're outside in the sun, there's a lot of shadow out there, and there's all this beautiful reflected light from the sun that's bouncing off other objects. And when light bounces, it inherits the color to a degree of the thing it bounced off. So if sunlight bounces off grass, it'll turn greener because of the green grass mixing with the color of the sun as well. So reflected light also gives a lot of color to your pictures because you're able to pick up colors from the environment and surroundings. So in my cartoony illustrations, I'm really interested in exaggerating and like caricaturing light and color. And I use reflected light, I think, to a strong degree, I guess, in terms of influencing the amount of colors in a piece. You know, people have commented on my work that I, you know, it's colorful and stuff like that. Most of my color comes from reflected light because that's how it works in real life.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah, your work is very colourful. I love, especially your monster illustrations. They're very, very colourful, very beautiful,
Oh,
very
thanks.
immersive.
And it's just that's just lessons learned from nature, and but then caricatured. That is pushed farther. So it's like I did a study once of someone like a head, and I suggested a simplification study. Anyway, someone was commenting like they don't see the colors I use. Like that, I don't see those colors in the photo. And I'm like, you're right, they're not in the photo, but the colors are moving in that direction, and I'm just pushing them further. So that's a caricature of the light and color. That's kind of how I try and do my own work anyway.
Yeah, because I was about to ask, like, what is your approach to choosing the colors? Like, how do you choose your color palette?
So it's that starts with deciding what the temperature of the light is. That is the light warm or cool? And it can be degrees of warm and cool. But if it's a sunlight, the sunlight is always warm. It changes temperature throughout the day, but it's always going to be warmer than the sky. The sun is always warmer than the sky. So if I'm painting a sunlight, outdoor sunlit day, I'll say, okay, I already know the sun is going to be warm. Just how much warmer? Is it a noon type of sun, which is less saturated, or is it evening and sunset, which the sun gets very hot at that point, temperature-wise, color temperature-wise? And then I compare that to the ambient light source, which in the case of an outdoor sunlit day would be the sky. So I have warm sun, cool sky. Then it's a matter of, okay, go and paint. Like, how do those mix? The sunlight's going to dominate the light. I mean, there's whole lessons to get into there, which I have on my YouTube channel. But
Yeah.
the sun will warm up everything it hits, color temperature wise, and the sky will cool down the things in shadow that it has dominance over. And then there's all kinds of color mixtures, of course, that happen as a result of that. So planning color is largely just, yeah, what is the temperature of the light source versus the temperature of the general environment. I start there.
Yeah, definitely. No, that sounds really good because I feel like I've noticed lately anyway that I've been amplifying the color when I draw people's pets. I've naturally just started amplifying the color of the eyes and making that more extreme, and then especially like when you've got colorful cats like tabby cats and things, they have, and tortie cats, they have a lot of different colors in their fur, and I feel like I naturally just over saturated them as I drew. And now that I'm trying to teach that, I've only just realized that that's what I do because I've gone back over it to see, okay, so what am I actually doing here? And it's very interesting to do that, to exaggerate the color, because I do feel like it makes it look better than a photo then. So when you get those compliments, oh, it's better than a photo, I think that's why, isn't it? Because you're exaggerating the color.
Absolutely, yeah. People will respond, I think, better to art that is pushed beyond what life will do. I don't. I think a non-artist thinks of it as an extreme compliment when you say, "Oh, that looks just like a photo." To me, that's actually not a compliment at all. It's not too hard to make something look like a photo. Actually, I'll suggest it's quite easy to make something look like a photo. But if you can push beyond it based on what the life reference is doing, that gets a lot more response out of the viewer because you've captured something true about life and put a spotlight on it. It's like a poem or something, and they'll come away with that. So I try and do that in my work, and I'm not always successful, but I try. And I also, I know that the response I get to people seeing my work is at its best when I do that, when I'm able to do that. And I know that I personally respond to work that does that as well, that kind of captures something that's true about something, and like it kind of eliminates other things.
Yes, definitely. I agree. I think that's what I really like about your work as well, because it is, I guess, a caricature of life. It's just so much brighter, colorful, contrast, like you said. And yeah, that's what's really drawn me to your work anyway.
Oh, thank you.
So you work both in digital and traditional mediums. What are the differences that you notice between them, and what skills are transferable?
So going on the last part first, the fundamentals are 100% transferable. No, there's no difference. The technique, the process changes, and digital is way more forgiving, and traditional is less forgiving, but it gives you more like feedback. Where, for example, when you're mixing with watercolor will generate mixtures just on its own, like how the pigments mix in a wet wash that you would have to fight for in digital. You'd have to really try and do that by hand. Whereas with digital, you mix some pigment together, you're going to get all these different little mixtures just based on the imperfections of your brush, of your palette, of how you're putting the paint down, how loaded the brush is. All those things are going to factor in your painting. So I'd say it's easier to get variety traditionally, but it's easier to experiment and try different things digitally. And it's easier to control the medium digitally because it's infinite undos, infinite layers, whatever. Excuse me. So to me, they both go hand in hand. And for my whole art life, which is, I think I said like about 24 years now, if I'm starting from 2001, which is roughly when I think I started, at 19 years old, my whole art life has been bouncing back and forth from traditional to digital. I actually didn't start digital for the first 2 to 3 years, because again, back in 2001, like, yeah, tablets were a thing, but like people generally didn't have them, like home users generally didn't have them. It was more of a professional thing. So I didn't have a tablet for the first few years. So I learned the basics. I wasn't any good, but I learned the basics of oil painting, gouache, acrylic, watercolor. I tried all those things. And then I started digital. And before long, I was just switching back and forth between the two. And they do inform each other because of the differences in strengths they have.
So because I guess digital, you can do a lot of undos and trying things out. Do you feel like it's better for the smaller practices, the sort of understanding of the basics, and then to go to traditional to actually, like, I guess, flesh things out and go a bit deeper on a topic?
Yeah, for sure. Digital, I think, is even though I do most of my studies traditionally, I think actually digital is best suited for study because you can quickly get something done, you can experiment, you can paint over things quickly. That said, though, it's hard to take digital media outdoors. I mean, yeah, you can take an iPad outside and stuff, but I just find it somehow a bit more friendly to have a nice compact setup, gouache or watercolor, and just start mixing pigment. It all depends on what you find more enjoyable at that point. The strengths and weaknesses, it's hard to say how they'll affect any given person. For me, I like to do my larger illustrations digitally, just because again, I love playing with different brushes and experimenting with things as I work, which is a bit harder to do traditionally, where you have to plan things out a bit more. With digital, I feel like I have endless ability to just move things around and change things, which I like creatively. However, when it comes to my studies, even though I just said digital is probably better for that, I prefer doing it traditionally because I love all the little happy accidents that occur more naturally with traditional, with little color changes and working in a messy palette where you can pick all these different colors from your palette that are just there from the previous painting. I love that stuff. And then that informs my digital. So I just gave you a non-answer. I have no particular advice for anyone there, but other than they both have their strengths and weaknesses.
Well, if you had to choose one, then which one would you choose to do forever?
Oh, wow. Traditional. I would choose traditional. Yeah, I have more fun traditionally. I would miss digital though. I would miss it.
No, I love traditional as well. I've actually never tried digital, and I'd really like to.
Oh,
Is
nice.
yeah, I just haven't had the opportunity yet. But yeah, I've always been a drawer. I've always drawn, especially with a pencil, as a color pencil artist. I love a pencil. So, but I think it'll be good to try new mediums to see how to express yourself in different ways, I suppose, because I feel like when you pick up different mediums, another part of you comes out, another way of drawing, another way of seeing things or illustrating something. It's definitely different per medium, I feel like.
Yes, absolutely. First of all, I'm totally envious that you've never done digital painting. That's amazing. You're like a unicorn in today's world of artists. As a teacher, a lot of my students are like on the younger end, in their low 20s, let's say, and everyone is digital now. So when I first started teaching, I would actually get a pretty even mix of traditional versus digital. These days, like 98% digital and 2% traditional. So it's always refreshing to come across a traditional artist.
No, I definitely like to try it. I'm very open to trying any medium
Yeah.
because I just love art in general. So,
You'll have
yeah, I'm
to
not one of
let me
those
know how
people
you
that are
like it.
against it. Yes, I will. I'll definitely. How can artists start to critique their own work in a way that is constructive rather than just thinking that it looks bad?
Yeah, that's a very important question. What always has worked for me is I didn't go to a traditional art school. Like I didn't go to art college. I mentioned earlier I had a teacher. I had a teacher for like 3 months. He had a few mentor, a few like 12-week sort of guided drawing programs that I took, two of them. I took two classes under him. Each class was 12 weeks long. So I had official tutelage for like 24 weeks when I first started. After that, it was all just either drawing community-based, like drawing with friends and stuff, and giving each other constructive feedback. And the big one for me has been just thanks to the internet, just buying inexpensive classes on either, well, back when I was younger, it was like on DVD and stuff, but now it's obviously just like streaming. And of course, YouTube now. I would watch, I've seen, I've watched so many art videos from all disciplines, traditional, digital, visual effects, like all kinds of things that are all related to what I like to do as an artist, and just to understand light better and understand all this stuff. And what I would do when I would watch like someone paint traditionally, that I would be inspired by, of course, I would go try and do a similar exercise. They're painting boats in a little ravine. I would go to something like that near me, watercolor, for example, and like I would paint the same thing. And then I would inevitably not be happy with my own work because that's the classic artist way. But to answer your question, I would go back to the class I was just taking, the video I was just watching, and say like, okay, I failed here. How did they succeed there? Like, the reflection of a boat. How did they do that in a way that I couldn't do? And you just granularly go, sort through your problems and say, okay, they're doing this, whatever this is, making the reflection lighter or darker or softer, whatever it is. And then say, okay, and then maybe you work over your painting to make it better. Or what I would do, because I had a back before I had a family and everything, all I did was practice art. I'd go right back out there to that same spot and try it again. Again, I was in Toronto, everything was close, right? Here I only have limited subject matter choices, but I would hop on my bike, go back to that ravine and paint it again, maybe the next day or maybe later that day, who knows? And I would solve my problems one by one based on what my influences were, what the class I was taking was telling me. Again, these were all like, I wouldn't really compare myself to other artists' like finished work. I don't think that's quite a great way, but I would compare my work to what the class was teaching me. And I would say like, okay, like did I succeed in the list of the things that are in this class? And if not, I would try it again. And that try it again mentality is something I still have today. And I think it's the way that I got to where I am anyway. And if people try that, I think it would work. You just gotta be patient with yourself is the skill there.
So you are more like comparing your processes and techniques rather than necessarily, does it look like the same picture? Does it look like the
Yeah.
same painting? Right.
That's right. I remember the most concrete example was one summer I was so frustrated with my inability to use watercolor. Watercolor's tough, and all kinds of mixtures happen without you knowing. And so I was like, okay, I am not going to paint oil or digital this summer. This was back in like 2005, let's say. I am only going to do watercolor this summer. And I had some videos from some company that made just exclusively watercolor videos of artists that I liked. I had like four or five of their DVDs that I ordered, and I would watch every, I would just watch them. Then I would go out and like find similar subject matter and paint it. And then I would compare, like not one for one, because like our pictures were different subject matters, but like how successfully I was able to capture something versus how successfully they were able to capture a similar thing. And like I would try and laser focus and hone in on the differences. Now, at the end of that, it's not like I became that art. It's not like I became someone else. What I did was I just refined my technique, maybe refined my fundamentals along the way too. And ultimately, like we go back to the style conversation, ultimately, then I was able to inject my own way of doing it. So it's a big, big long process where it's like you're learning the ropes, learning it, applying fundamentals. And then if it clicks, then you're like, okay, this is great. Now I can apply like my own thoughts and feelings about it. And suddenly, no, not suddenly, it takes a long time, but over that amount of time, it becomes your own way of doing things.
It's that classic thing of putting in the hours, isn't it? You can't just naturally be amazing at something as soon as you try it for the first time, which can be extremely frustrating to a lot of people, especially me. But it's something that you have to keep working at, isn't it?
Oh yeah. I think everyone has that initial reaction of like, oh wow, I'm worse at this than I even thought I would be. And oh, I'm not immune to that. Trust me. I have all kinds of different interests, and every single thing I'm interested in, I was terrible, right? I was terrible out of the gate. But the interest hopefully keeps the fire lit under you. And if you are, like I said, just a bit patient with yourself and you just tackle the same problem again and again and again, you'll eventually, keep swinging the axe, as they say. That tree is eventually going to fall down. You just got to stick
Yeah,
with it, really.
definitely. Yeah, because I'm sort of doing that at the moment for myself because I spent like 9 years drawing animals and pets, and now I'm trying out landscapes and flowers. And you wouldn't think they're that different, but my goodness, they are different. And I just feel like I'm so bad at it. It's very weird to me to be so bad at the material that I've been using for so long, and it's just not working in the way that I want it to, and it's very strange. And it can, I guess, it can be disheartening in a way as well, but you gotta keep pushing yourself and keep trying it. And it's very interesting how quickly you can progress when you keep going with it as well.
Absolutely, yeah. It's if you I'd imagine in a case like yours, and I've experienced similar things, you kind of develop a bag of tricks. Like if you're painting animals, you probably like in you know what their noses look like, and you probably know what tools you like to use. Where you're painting a flower, well, that's a different thing. It's a different beast altogether, and no pun intended. So your bag of tricks is no longer there, but that's where the fundamentals come in, right? The fundamentals are always there. So you, like you said, you can then pretty quickly rise through the difficulties of any new subject and figure it out. Again, I will always go back to the fundamentals when I have an opportunity to. So.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely learning that now.
Oh, great.
So, how do you know when a piece is finished, or when you need, or when you need to keep going with it?
Yeah, that's another good one. I know a piece is finished when sort of two things happen. One is, first of all, I never finish a piece in the same day. I always go to sleep and look at it the next morning because, fresh eyes. I flip the canvas around, like with, I guess in your case, traditionally with a mirror. I have a mirror. I look at it in a mirror. It tricks your brain into kind of seeing it for the first time momentarily. So I do that. I make sure I look at it the next morning. When I feel that it is communicating all the little nuances of emotion that I set out to, then I feel it's done. Also, on a more process approach, like the nuts and bolts of your process, just naturally, I find myself, I basically paint from the broad to the specific. So when I find myself zooming in and painting someone's finger, I know I'm getting close to being done because I'm no longer solving the big problems. I'm solving these tiny little problems. And you could work forever solving little tiny problems. There comes a point where I'm like, yeah, I could solve 20 more problems, but it's not going to make a material difference. So I'm done.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like when it comes to artwork, it's very easy to get lost in those details rather than think of the overall picture and how that looks and feels, isn't it?
Exactly.
So how can artists try and free themselves up a bit and detach from perfectionism when it comes to their artwork?
How can I? Oh, that's a good question. I would say, look at the other, this is related to your previous question, but look at your artworks very small, from across the room, or is just if you're working digitally, just zoom way out so the picture is very small on your screen. And say, even at distance, because people are really going to engage with your work first in today's day and age in thumbnail and in Instagram thumbnails. Like, people are going to see your work that way first. And on your website, it's probably going to be on a small thumbnail. You got to make sure that your picture delivers the full impact, even in thumbnail. So I work zoomed out when I work digitally. I work zoomed out a lot. And if I'm painting traditionally, I'm not right up close like this. If I'm holding a sketchbook, it's out here, and I'm doing this like it's on an easel, and I'm doing this. I keep a physical distance between me and the work, and that will ensure that it delivers its punch from a distance. And that is a big one, because perfectionism often shows up in trying to get it out your smallest brush and solve all these little things. But like I said, there is a point of diminishing returns to that where it's no longer helping the piece, and I would argue actually starts destroying the piece. And perfectionism can be a destroyer of art for sure. And there's also that saying that I like, don't let perfection get in the way of the good. Let it be good. It doesn't have to be perfect. Like, your version of perfect, like the proverbial you, your version of perfect is, who's even to say that's the best version of the art? Let it. I usually stop before I have solved all the problems. I always know, like, I could spend another 5 hours on this and noodle out a flower over here or a leaf over there. Like, I could do that, but is that really going to help? If no, then I'm not going to do it. I will leave it alone. Oftentimes, these, in my opinion, this is style dependent as well, but the more you can leave suggestive, the higher impact your piece can have. There's a fine balance there, of course. You can't leave everything suggestive, but if I can leave certain things suggestive, the viewer tends to enjoy that experience.
Yeah, and having that difference between the suggestive parts and the sort of more finished, detailed parts.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. I also feel like, especially if you're doing it for a client, if the client's happy, then you're done. You don't need to,
There you go. The client
Yeah,
will
you
tell
don't
you
need to,
when you're done.
yeah, exactly. I find that actually very helpful because sometimes I feel like, well, I could keep working on this or it could be finished. So I'll ask them.
Oh, that's exactly the exact sentence I have in my brain. I'm like, yep. Yeah. I is it done? I'll send it to you. You tell me.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's very helpful with that way. So if an artist wants to start taking commercial work like you've done, where should they begin and what advice would you give them?
So, in I will fully admit that I don't think I'm a good person to answer that question, because when I had a very clear path when I started. As a my I turned professional in quotes back in 2005, because that's when I got my first studio job. So it makes sense to call it that then. But back in 2005, which is like 20 years ago now, which is crazy to think for me, it was easy. You had a portfolio. Yeah, you probably had a website too, but you had a physical portfolio, and you showed up at job fairs. You showed up. You sent it to animation studios, and they would review it and like email you if they're interested. Or you go to a job fair and you physically show the art director your portfolio. And they would hire you or not, or they would give you feedback. Today, you don't really do that. I mean, yeah, you can send portfolios in, but a lot of my jobs have come from just my online presence. Word of mouth, people find you, they recommend you, or the algorithm shows you to someone. I think today's world is a lot more out of, not beyond control, but there's a lot of more, way more variables today in terms of getting notice and getting jobs than there was when I first started. So the best I can say is try and have a website, have a personal website where you curate your work like rigorously. You don't just post every sketch you do. You can have an Instagram for that or something like that. Post it on whatever social media platform. But if you have like an art station or a website, I would curate that very carefully to demonstrate your strengths and your interests. Like, you know, if you're good with color or characters or backgrounds, choose like one thing and put that there, and the highest quality you have. This is where quality matters over quantity, which is the opposite of what I said before in terms of study. In study, quantity matters over quality. In your portfolio, quality matters way more than quantity. Did I get that right? Quality matters more than quantity. Yeah. So you got to make sure that you are putting your top 10 pieces, and they ideally should all just be stunners, like boom, boom, boom. You're hitting them with your hardest punch every time. And that would make the impact because, you know, there's also a lot more. I think the internet, this is a good thing, but I think the internet has fostered a lot more artists today than there was 20 years ago, at least in the like people looking for work anyway. And that's a good thing. I mean, the world always needs more art, I think, but professionally and like for job prospects, maybe that's not a good thing because it's more saturated now, so it's harder. So yeah, you just got to curate a very good portfolio that only includes your best work. And probably just you don't need that many. You know, my magic number there is 10. If you have 10 amazing pieces, people will notice that. You know, good work is good work.
And I guess target it to what kind of job you'd want to do. So if you're
Yes.
trying to do like a specific type of animation, then you would just show your examples of that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, you can probably have a few different, if you want to have a few different styles, you could probably have that. That would probably help in terms of like, you know, showing a prospective client that you are adaptable. But yeah, like if you want to do like, well, in your case, like let's say you want to do animal portraits, you'd have like several animal portraits, maybe a few different styles, a few different mediums, maybe. But yeah, you would tailor your portfolio for the job you want to get. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So you share your knowledge on YouTube and through courses on your website. At what stage did you decide that you were going to start teaching art, and why was it important to you that you do that?
I believe I made my first video in 2009. It's still on my YouTube channel. It's a terrible video, but I can't bring myself to delete it. I've deleted several of my videos, but I can't delete that one. So I believe if someone can look. I believe it's 2009, maybe 2008. And what compelled me to start teaching was just like I mentioned earlier in our chat here that I never started with any kind of talent or head start or natural ability. I did have the interest. I just started with an interest. And thankfully, I was able to find various artists along the way who were kind enough to help me. And because of that, I was able to have some like aha moments in my own progression. And it kind of dawned on me, like, hey, like I consider myself kind of just a regular person. If I can have those aha moments, I can maybe give those to someone else. And like, I feel like I've always liked public speaking, which is a weird thing in my brain. I've never been afraid of that for some reason, probably something wrong with me, but I'm like, and I always enjoyed it. So I'm like, if I can combine teaching with, which includes public speaking, maybe I can like develop this thing where I never thought of like, there was no being a YouTuber. That wasn't a thing back in 2009, but I did think like, maybe I could like do a teaching thing as well as being an artist. And I started making videos. So that's the answer. That's a long answer to that. But it was not long after that that I started like at the studio I worked at. I organized like a lunchtime lunch and learn kind of thing, right? Where it's like I did the first one where I just give a presentation over lunch to whoever wanted to come about. I did it about painting and color and stuff, and like that started catching on at the studio that I was at. And then that fueled more videos, and then it wasn't long after that that a few schools contacted me, both big and small. I worked at a big studio out of San Francisco, I think it was, and then I worked at a smaller like little digital art summits that people would put on online, and just word of mouth got around that, hey, here's a person teaching art, and yeah, that's how it happened. So it was largely born out of like people helping me. And second to that was I enjoy the process of speaking and putting together little videos as well, which I hadn't mentioned. I went to film school, and in film school we did a lot of editing and film work. So I had some actual education in like editing and storytelling, and I feel like I could combine all that with teaching.
That's fantastic. I can see why your YouTube has done so well then. If you know how to do the storytelling and you love the teaching, I can really tell that you love teaching. Like, it really comes across in your videos. It's so easy to listen to you, I think, when you're watching your videos, because you say everything so clearly and like in a sort of like, I guess, an easy to understand way. Like, anyone coming from any kind of background like me, I don't know much about digital art itself, but the way you explain it is just so helpful to understand from that perspective. You can tell that you're very passionate about it.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And anyone who watches my videos, I appreciate their time and attention. The thing that the other thing I have in me is like there's some kind of like fighting spirit where art is always seen like I said, I didn't know you could learn to draw. I feel like art, it has this mysterious aura to it, a bit less now, thankfully, but there's still this mysterious aura that artists are like magicians somehow, and like you can't learn to do it. And like I want to fight against that, being like, yes, you can. There's no magic. It's just application of skill. Like you said earlier, Sama, like you can, everything in this world, I think, is a skill you can learn to a degree. Not that everyone can be good at everything. I don't think that. I'm never going to be an Olympic runner. Like this is not going to happen for me. But if I wanted to get better at running, I could do it. You just got to put in the time, put in the miles. So art is like that. I'm like, you can learn it. Here is, to the extent that I can teach it, here's how I learn these things. And like item by item by item, like nothing left unturned, like no stone left unturned. That's the kind of like fighting spirit I feel like are in my videos. I'm like, here's everything I think you need to know. And my premium content, goes even deeper into it.
No, definitely. I feel exactly the same way when it comes to selling your art, because for so long people were like, no, art is just a hobby. You can never be an artist. You can never sell your work and live off it, basically. And I was just so determined to prove everybody wrong, because it annoyed me. It annoyed me that that was the concept. Like, it's like, but I love art. I want to do this for the rest of my life, not anything else. Why can't it pay me? So I literally have dedicated the last 9 years to learning and teaching how to sell your artwork. And I'm just how you're so passionate about proving people wrong that they can learn art. I like to do the same with thing of like showing people, yes, you can sell your art. I'm very passionate about that.
I love it. There's a fighting spirit to it. I like that. Yeah.
Definitely.
And it's not fighting
Well, I
against
th
any person. It's just a general
yeah.
aura that's out there.
Yes, exactly. Just fighting against all of those like typical things that everyone thinks and says about art in general. Yeah. So I think that's all we have time for today, but thank you so much for being here. It's been absolutely fascinating, and I'm so inspired by everything that you've said. It's been really wonderful.
Thank you so much, Sema. And it was great to hear your stories along the way too. So I hope people enjoyed this, and thanks for those listening. Hopefully we can do it again.
Yes, definitely. So to find out more about Marco or take one of his courses, go and visit marcobucciartstore.com, or subscribe to his YouTube channel. The links are in the description below. So bye, Marco. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.